Communion. I'm Jacqueline Michelle, and I am so honored you're here, and I cannot wait for you to hear this week's conversation. Each week, I sit in communion with a member of the Interior Creature community to talk about the work of deconditioning, of exploring every little nook and cranny of our birth charts, and the process of moving from that intellectual epiphany stage to actual embodiment of the highest and most compassionate frequencies of the energies in our charts. Another thing to note, everybody who I sit down with in communion is given a pseudonym just to protect their privacy and to create a safe container that allows for vulnerability and honesty. Today, I'm going to share with you my conversation with Frankie, a 1-3 manifester with emotional authority, whose Saturn placements span Aquarius and Pisces. Over the course of our conversation, Frankie and I dig into what we can expect from Saturn's move into Pisces and discuss the themes of their upcoming Saturn return. We're going to drop into the conversation right after I thank Frankie for sitting down with me and asked about the human design experiment thus far.
I sort of can't remember exactly how I came upon human design. I went through this like big personal saga of having back pain, and I read this book by John Sarno, which is kind of about like the mind-body connection, and then that led me into all this like self-inquiry. And his kind of like main thesis is that a lot of back pain is caused by unconscious repressed anger.
Oh, interesting.
And at that time, like when I first came to human design, it was probably 3 or 4 years ago now, I was like really skeptical and not really interested in any.
Totally understandable. Like, yeah, I see that. I was a little bit myself at first too. I get that. It's interesting that you mentioned anger though too, because that's the not self theme of the manifestor, right? Like, so we're looking at Frankie's chart, manifestor, emotional authority, just split definition between the head, the mind, and then we've got like the throat, the solar plexus, the root, and the spleen all connected together. So anger is like one of the primary ways that your body communicates with you. So that, like, tell me a little bit more about that. Like, so you started doing this mind-body connection down the rabbit hole there. Yeah. And so how's your experiment with the tools of human design been so far?
Yeah. So when I came to it, it was around the same time that I was getting to know a lot of my unconscious anger. And so that piece, along with like reading about the environment, like I have caves environment and indirect light digestion. And when I was little, I used to like hide in the cupboard and read and make these like little cozy dark caves. So I was like, how does this know these
things?
It's
weird, right? Yeah, it's funny. I had the same kind of experience. I'm caves as well, I think. And I was like, wait a minute, where did, like, this makes 100% sense. Like, I always like things, like kind of, I like my back to a wall. I, you know, when I go into a room, I tend to sit in the back near a corner. Like, I like to kind of, you know, I'm always the person who takes a seat on the plane next to the window. Like, it just like, I kind of like that little, like to kind of my nook. Right. And yeah, it's so funny when you see yourself reflected back and you're like, oh my God, I'm wired that way. I never considered that that was where that preference or might have come from.
I love a nook.
I love a little nook. Yeah. Oh, I love that. What was I going to say? So, So just as an emotional manifester, how has your experiment been so far with the, I guess one of the things I always talk to my manifester clients about is when you're making like small kind of like day-to-day decisions and how informing kind of, you know, factors into that, as well as like your spleen, your splenic authority, like you have your spleen defined, versus like when you're trying to make a massive decision where we involve your emotional solar plexus. So how has it been kind of, I guess, experimenting with this idea of honoring your splenic, you know, messaging, or honoring your emotional solar plexus messaging, and like informing, like, how is that? Has it been difficult? Has it been easy? Have you found success with that? Like, talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah. With the informing, I definitely went through a phase of like, I think a lot of manifestors go through that where it's like stroppy. Well, I told you so.
Yeah.
Therefore, I get everything I want. And over time, like, that's not really what it's like. I don't really think about informing so much these days. Like, maybe I will again. And it's still like a bit, like, there's a difference between thinking about it and then like actually doing it. And I think when I'm actually doing it, it's quite natural-ish.
Yeah.
And I think like the emotional authority, particularly for me, because I've got those like two waves running, and then also with like the channel of awareness, I get like ideas pretty much constantly. And so I just have to like bank them. I just put them away, and then it requires like, I think this is an a manifestor sort of thing, but then it's also like a me thing. Is I just have to trust more than like I just have to have infinite trust in both myself and the process of life. And so like rather than trying to like make specific decisions so much, I just have to like trust what's happening day to day, because it's also it's really like mystical. Because a lot of my work is writing. So I'll do nothing for like months and then I'll do the work and then the work is done and it's fine, but it's not like anything I can explain to anyone.
It's manifestors as a type. Y'all are interesting because every other type in human design is the word wait in their strategy. There's like something from the body that we're all waiting for to like signal this is the right direction, this is the wrong direction. In your chart, like manifestors live in the moment. Like you are so anchored in the now, in the present, and it takes a bit of surrender to be able to do that, to say like I'm going to trust my body to basically inform me like moment to moment what feels safe, what doesn't through the spleen, what you're ready for, what you're not through that root center, what you care about, what you don't through the solar plexus, and trusting that there's that like beautiful loop you have in your chart between spleen connected to root, connected to solar plexus, connected to throat, that you'll be able to bring voice and action to the thing in the right timing, in the right way. And it can feel, it's so counter to the way most of us are conditioned to A, behave, B, make decisions, C, feel our intuition. So there's that kind of ultimate act of surrender. And then informing, it's funny. I was, as you were talking, I was thinking back to a lot of my manifestor clients. Informing is so tricky because I think as little children, a lot of times we're taught to ask permission and not told to like, just, you know, I've made a decision. I'm just giving you the respect and courtesy of informing you. And a lot of my clients go through a phase where, just like you described, where they either get like really like into the informing in terms of like, I am going to tell everyone everything I'm doing and I'm going to be very firm and I'm going to be like this kind of force of nature with it. And like, so it's my will. But then there's this other kind of, or I guess the other under the spectrum of that would be almost like asking for permission and turning things into a town hall. Where it's like it's not actually informing, you're still kind of have that conditioning of seeking the approval, seeking the validation, the verification. So yeah, so it's interesting how that's kind of evolved and developed, you know. And so yeah, it's just one of the things I think that most of the manifestors I've worked with have shared with me is they kind of go through this process of figuring out like who to inform, when to inform them, how much to tell them. And it almost kind of, it's like dividing people into like, who are my co-conspirators? Who are the people that want to like make things manifest with me, who are going to clear obstacles out of my way, who are going to help me make this process go a lot smoother? And then who are the people that are going to like yuck my yum? Who are the people that like don't believe in what I'm doing or going to throw obstacles in my way or maybe are, you know, I guess like taking my freedom of movement and agency as like something personal. And so they're going to try to like put up an obstacle or a roadblock or make it more difficult for me. It's like all of those factors. Manifestors almost have one of the more complex strategies in human design because there's so much of that factoring that goes in. And then it's like as you're stepping into the thing, listening to the body and letting the body tell you, like, oh, I thought this was going to be safe. Now that I'm in it, my spleen is saying no. Or I thought I was ready. And now that I'm in it, my spleen is saying no. So your timing, like you, I think you so astutely kind of mentioned, is like really dependent on what's going on in the now and that kind of surrender to that.
It's like concentric cycles rather than like a binary is the way that I just came up with
I love
that.
that. No, but that's perfect because I think like we're so obsessed with progress being this straight line, but it never is. Like progress never, it's concentric circles, it loops back on itself, its peaks, its valleys, and like figuring out what that momentum feels like to you most naturally, like that's a huge part of the manifestor journey. Like that's the thing you're kind of informing as a way to figure that out. Like, because it all comes back to what feels anchored and safe and emotionally, you know, resonant for you. What I thought was so interesting too is we were like communicating before we kind of recorded today. Your Saturn return started yesterday. So we're recording this on March 8th. And I know you're actually in a different time zone. So it's actually March 9th for you. But here in the States, March 7th marked the movement of Saturn out of Aquarius, out of gate 30 into gate 55 in Pisces. And that just happens to be, like, again, totally coincidentally, your conscious Saturn and your unconscious Saturn. So Frankie's unconscious Saturn is sitting in gate 30. Conscious Saturn is sitting in gate 55. So I would love to hear from you. Like, what have you heard about the Saturn return? What's your kind of initial impressions of like what the next few years are going to hold for you?
So I, again, am relatively new to these systems, but I often find that I intuitively, or just naturally, a lot of the themes that I'm, thinking about and feeling about match up naturally. And I'd only really heard of Saturn returns as being this, really challenging, trial period. I don't, it hasn't so, I mean, I don't want to
Been a
jinx
day. Been great
it.
so far.
And my understanding is that Pisces is sort of about the universal principles and the unconscious. I mean, I did cry 9 or 10 times yesterday, but again, that's kind of button bread and butter for me.
I mean, having emotional authority, that would not be uncommon, right? As a means of processing. Saturn, it's funny. We talk about this in the previous episode, the episode 3. I had an astrologer on named Sunita who like talked us through kind of the Saturn return. But one of the things that Saturn does is Saturn is kind of like our karmic, partner. It's almost as if like before we incarnated on the planet, we told Saturn, like, here's the thing I want to be held accountable for. Like, here's the lesson that I really, really want to make sure that this time when I'm on the planet, I either master this concept or I develop this area of my life. Like, I want to get better at this thing. And so Saturn, also in our body, uses the language of discomfort sometimes to get our attention. So Saturn, it takes the planet Saturn like 27 and a half years to move from the exact place it was at the moment of our birth in the sky all the way around the sun in a complete orbit back to that same place. So it's interesting in your chart, Saturn actually started that journey in your unconscious in gate 30, which is the gate of feelings. And that's actually the last gate of Aquarius. So you actually started your Saturn return at the unconscious level in a different sign than your conscious sun is sitting in, right? Because your conscious sun is the first kind of few degrees of Pisces in gate 55. So anyway, the theme Saturn takes on depends on the zodiac ruler of the sign that it's kind of occupying. So for Aquarius, what the collective has been kind of wrestling with for the past few years has been like our role in society, our communities, social justice, how we want to show up for each other. We've had issues around like technology and how we're interconnecting through technology or outside of technology. It doesn't surprise me there's been a rise in AI over the past couple of years as well. And this has also kind of been at the same time that Pluto has been sitting in Capricorn at that gate that it actually shares with Aquarius. So Pluto is about to make its transit from Capricorn to Aquarius, which again happens every, oh my goodness, I think it takes Pluto 280 something years to get all the way around the sun. So it's like even slower, that transit. But when Saturn goes back into kind of our natal placements, it is kind of like a it's a it Saturn uses that same language of discomfort to kind of shake us up and say, here's where things might be out of alignment for you. And it's a two and a half year opportunity then to say, okay, let me pay close attention to what feels uncomfortable, where I feel like there's tension or contraction or limitation or disruption. And now I actually have this space and energy to address it so that I can not keep like engaging in the same loops, the same patterns. And you're right with Pisces being a little bit different than Aquarius. Aquarius, again, is like social communities. Pisces being that culminating sign in the zodiac, kind of it's an amalgamation of all that's come before. It's nurturing, it's our emotions, it's how we nurture and nourish ourselves and others, it's interpersonal relationships, it's our creativity, our spirituality, that kind of unconscious that you mentioned. So it's kind of hitting multiple kind of aspects of our interpersonal relationships and our emotional lives with other people. So I thought it might be interesting to kind of take a look so far at Saturn in Pisces and kind of do like a little preview of what you can expect as Saturn does this transit. And maybe we can talk about these in the context of your chart as well. So the first gate that Pisces is going to transit through is called the gate of spirit. Now, this is actually in one of the channels that you have activated. So you have that channel of emoting from your root center to your solar plexus, which is again got gate 39, that gate of provocation, which is like this pressure to have these big emotionally intense experiences, and it wants to call things into your life that feel emotionally resonant. And then gate 55, the gate of spirit, is like, what sets my soul on fire? What am I emotionally invested in? It's helping us kind of locate that thing and then give our feelings to that. So talk to me a little bit about just, it's funny, you and I have the same profile. We're both ones. We're both one threes. Your gate 55 is sitting on a first line, which is very intellectual, very like, what's the depth I need to go to, which can seem a little counterintuitive to 55, which is like, what am I emotionally invested in? So think about, I guess, like think about your life to this point so far. Do you feel like you've been encouraged to find those things and those experiences and those people that have that deep kind of emotional resonance for you? Like, are you able to identify what those are really easily, or has that been an area of maybe struggle or challenge?
Yeah, I feel like the thoughts and the feelings piece and like the investigation, both like the investigation and like the bringing through of ideas, and also like the polarization of like the bringing together of opposites, all those things are like really present themes in my life. And I am at a point where I spend a lot of my time just like investigating things that are curious to me, that are interesting.
That's also that gate 61 and gate 24. That channel of awareness is like, I really want to understand things thoroughly. I want to sit between the question and the answer. I'm analytical. Like, you have a lot of first line energy present in your chart. That was one of the first things I noticed. You're like really introspective, really depth, really deep thinker, really analytical. So how has that been with though when it comes to like our brains though versus our emotional intelligence and our emotional depth and our emotional knowledge? Have you felt safer maybe in the brain than the body? Or have you felt like, oh yeah, that was
But
easy. Yeah.
yeah, but I mean, that's like over, I'd say again, like in the last, yeah, maybe like 4 or 5 years, it's been this real like intellectual inquiry. If you push it far enough, you always bump up against mystery, in my experience. And then mystery brings you back into the body, basically. And I think we see a lot of times that people, I can hear myself that I sound quite intellectual right now. That we kind of like culturally have a real tendency to sit on either side of that. I am fortunate that I'm sort of in a place where I have space for both of those things now. I sort of have like at the moment, I'm doing a PhD in marketing.
Ooh.
One of my big sort of like topic obsessions is how we can like restructure our systems to be actually like genuinely supportive.
Yeah, as opposed to that fear-based, like, scarcity infused, like if you don't do this right now kind of vibe, like that never felt, oh, so many traditional like marketing tactics do kind of live in that fear-based energy, and like, oh, I love that. So how do we restructure that?
The like the emotional piece, emotions are kind of atemporal. Like they're not operating on a linear timeline. Like especially if you look at things like, epigenetics and trauma and all that kind of stuff. And I'm probably like speaking out of school, like outside of my
No.
area of
Yeah, I mean,
expertise, but.
well, there's so much just emerging research that shows us that, like, not only do we store emotions literally in the body, in our, organs and our muscles and our tissue, but there's also like you said, like these epigenetic studies that have looked back and noticed that, like, I think what is that famous study with the mice that if you teach like a mouse that there's a certain area of the maze that's really dangerous and will electrocute them, like mice several generations forward will have that memory of that trauma in their body, even if they've never physically been there and experienced it. I'm probably paraphrasing that study horribly, so we might cut that part out if it's not true. Just wanted to jump in here for a second. I was partially right. Turns out the mice were trained to fear the scent of acetophenone, which apparently smells like cherries and almonds. It's this chemical, right? So that chemical scent was wafted into this chamber while these poor little mice were receiving electric shocks. And eventually, not only did those mice themselves begin to experience fear just when they smelled the chemical, but their pups did, who had never actually been exposed to that chemical smell or the electric shocks, and their grandpups did as well. I'll link an article about the study in the journal Nature in the show notes. So back to our conversation. But there are, like, that's a very real thing that I think science is really starting to kind of go, wow, like, the body does remember, the body keeps score, like the, you know, that famous book, it just remembers, and we're really carrying on sometimes trauma that we didn't even experience, that's just in our bodies from our, you know, our ancestry, like what we're being born into. And I think for you as an emotional manifester, like that brain body connection too, it's one thing to intellectually know, okay, mm-hmm. this area that's traumatic or difficult or challenging, but like, am I allowing myself to process the things out through the emotional body? Am I allowing myself to release certain emotions that maybe are stored up that I've been denying or negating? What I think Gate 55 specifically is going to hold in store for you, because it is your kind of natal Saturn, is I have a feeling that this first part of the Saturn return might be one of the more intense parts of it. But I think you're probably going to get called over the next, again, like 3-6 months or so, to really investigate for yourself, what is it that I'm really passionate about? What sets my soul on fire? Like, what are those experiences, people, places, opportunities, things that I have deep, deep emotional resonance with? And am I holding enough space to explore those things in my life? And when I'm in those things, am I really allowing myself to feel my feelings, or do I have some sort of like numbing tendency? Or I know that's something I'm working on myself as well. I have an open solar plexus. I am like, you know, I definitely have developed over the years shielding mechanisms from like feeling things too deeply. But yeah, so that might be, I could see that being a big theme for just like the kind of beginning of this, because especially it's coming on the heels of Aquarius leaving gate 30 and gate of feelings, again, which is another placement in your chart, is all about like, I guess, our comfort level with our emotions, the depth of our emotions, like how we're able to honor our feelings in the moment, and like who we're sharing our feelings with and how we're sharing our feelings. And like, yeah, so they're very like emotionally kind of intense gates to be transiting.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, I definitely have a curiosity about the, yeah, uncomfortability, which I think is a word that you used in relation to Saturn. Like, in my personal experience, really, like, difficult things that have happened, like, grief processes have been, like, really beneficial in a kind of, I guess, a mystical way. But then also, like, I can also see places where, like, both personally and collectively, we disregard like feeling the full scope of our capacity for joy and play and silliness and, like, you know, the whole spectrum of emotions, and then also like carrying that, it's interesting, like carrying that kind of intense emotional energy with the manifestoriness, like the way that I experience myself is so different to how other people experience me. So I feel like that's kind of coming up at this point in time as well. Like,
oh yeah, we're taught to hide emotions, right? I saw this really funny, it was a cute little like meme on Instagram the other day, where a woman had tweeted that like someone from HR had just bought her a box of tissues into her office, and she goes, I guess my, you know, every afternoon crying sessions are not so secret after all. And I was it was funny because when I saw that, I was like, oh god, I have been there. But it was also thinking about the bigger, larger issue that like we, and this is like, again, magnified, you know, through, you know, society's obsession with this like gender binary, like we get such conditioning around whether it's okay to show emotions. And is that, and like a lot of times we're taught that that's a weakness, or it's something that makes, you know, us hysterical, or whatever that kind of conditioned like mindset we have. A lot of us repress and suppress and try to like it's not polite or it's not kind or it's not okay to share, to be a person with emotions, which what is one of the most, human things that we all share is our capacity to feel things. And like being a human, an emotional human is messy and it's not convenient. And we're going to leak and we're going to have big feelings about things. We're going to speak out of turn. We're going to say the wrong thing. And I think what's interesting for you, especially as an emotional manifester, is that's part of your intuitive body. Like your intuition speaks to you through your emotions. Like your solar plexus is like, I need to feel into every nook and cranny of this decision to know how it's going to make me feel, to know what feels the most emotionally resonant, the most emotionally, like I feel the most emotional investment in, like where do I feel emotionally at home? And then that's the thing I need to kind of, I can invest in emotionally because that's where my physical energy lies. Because for you, especially in your chart, like solar plexus and root are your two energy centers, the timing has to be right and the emotional investment needs to be there. And so I feel like this is going to be a collective calling for us. Again, we were talking in the previous episode about like what Pisces, Saturn and Pisces means for the collective, also what it means for the individual. I feel like regardless of whether someone's Saturn is in Pisces or not, like feeling our feelings and owning our feelings and not being so ashamed of the emotional part of our journey could be a big part of like what we're going to be reckoning with collectively during this part of the return.
Yeah, it's interesting as you say that, like part of my experiment in my journey is like, as someone that's like quite comfortable in, I want to say like the ether, like the intellectual, like the mystical, all that like kind of big space stuff, emotions, which is sort of thought of as being like less structured as like thoughts in a way, have actually been like learning my emotions has been like a real process of just like, yeah, accepting being a human and how that's linked to things like exercising and sleeping and drinking water. Like all those are super important for mental and emotional health.
Are you a small business owner or spiritual practitioner working in the wellness space? Want to get your offerings in the ear holes of the most amazing members of the Interior Creature community? If so, you are in luck because I am looking for sponsors for upcoming episodes. Drop me an email at interiorcreature, all one word, at gmail.com, and let's chat to see if you're a good fit. Now, back to the pod. I think at some point, materialist science decided that the intellect was more important than experience or the emotional body. And we've kind of like, it's funny, I read a book a while ago about like the history of magic and how it used to be like there was religion, there was magic, and there was science. And there were like three kind of like points on a triangle. And then at some point it became like, but it was a triangle that was always like circulating, right? There was no hierarchy. It was just kind of like these are three points in which we kind of experience the world. And then at some point, magic kind of got subsumed into religion, but then like eaten, I guess, by religion a little bit. And it became this almost binary between like belief and what we know to be true. But yet there's so much that we experience, which you, of course, know with your channel of awareness, like you're a little bit more adept at probably sitting in this space. Like there are things that we experience as humans that we may not have the language for or the evidence for, or the, there are things that are beyond comprehension that like emotions kind of sit in that kind of like amorphous, I don't know where they come from. We can't control them. We can't, like, there's not a metric we can use. Like, even when you go to, I always think of like the first graders I used to work with when I was a teacher. Like, we used to have a little poster on our board that was like, which face do you feel like today? And it had an angry face and a sad face and a confused face. Like, that's like about as systematized as we can get. Like, emotions aren't something we can quantify. There's not like a table we can put up that, like, maps emotions in that way. And then I guess, so I think that's probably, I don't know, that probably has a lot to do with why we somehow they've gotten considered to be lesser than the intellect, but I think they're both deep sources of intelligence. And I think that's also a big part of your chart's journey too, is this brain body. Like they're literally split off from each other in your chart. You've got your head and your mind center connected through your channel of awareness, which is like such a brilliant, beautiful channel to have. Like, I mean, people with the channel of awareness are able to literally be like innovators and expanders in whatever field is their zone of genius because they can sit, between the question and the answer and like get, I don't know, they're able to kind of take what we know and kind of expand it and innovate it and stand on the shoulders of it and like take it new directions. But then we also have like your mind center literally not connected to the throat. So there's all this intellect and processing that's happening without a clear and consistent exit point out into the world. But then we have all of the body connected to the throat, like the intuition, the anchoredness through your root, your solar plexus, which are in and of themselves like three really powerful centers. But they're as powerful as the brain. And it's hard because human design's whole thesis is, what if we try to start with the body first, let the body tell us what it wants, and then kind of go back to the brain later? It can feel so like counterintuitive to what we've been taught, or just opposite of, the way we feel like is natural, but the natural is probably really just the conditioned. Well, so the next, it's interesting, because the next gate that's going to come up for you in this kind of Saturn transit is gate 37. So that's not when you natally have in your chart. So this will be interesting energy to kind of play with. So gate 37 is all about our relationships to our community. So it's called the gate of friendship. And gate 37 asks us to really think about, our role within our like interpersonal relationships, friendships, romantic relationships. And are we able to show up exactly as we are? Or are we navigating someone else's projections, expectations, conditions for like the way in which our love is received? So gate 37 a lot of times is wrestling with, I don't want my acceptance to be conditional. Like, I'm this provider, I'm a caretaker, I show up for the people that I love, but I don't want that, what I'm receiving in return, to mean I have to conform myself to someone else's idea of what I should be doing. Like, they talk about it as like, folks, sometimes it's like non-traditional. Like, they don't maybe necessarily want the, white picket fence and the 2.5 children and the, it's like they want to live a life that feels a lot more authentic, but they want emotional relationships. So it's like they want to be able to have their individuality, their autonomy, their independence, but also receive the community's support, because they're going to be giving a lot of support to the community as well. So that would be an interesting thing. So how is, like, I guess that would be an interesting thing to think about too. Issues of community, issues of acceptance, issues of identity within your interpersonal and romantic relationships. So I know that's not a gate you natally have, but like, yeah. So talk to me about like how that kind of lands with you as being part of the Saturn return.
Yeah, I can feel like that feels challenging to me more so than the 50. Gate 55, I can jam with that. Like universal consciousness, rah, 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 emotions, easy peasy. Relating to other people, slightly more challenging, especially like over the long term. Just because like I'm so mutable and I change so much, I find it quite challenging. Like if I see someone that I haven't seen for a few years and they're like, oh, you're doing this, you're doing that, and I'm like, no, I haven't done that for a long time. Like that's just not me anymore.
It's you and I. One of the things we also have in common with our chart, besides having the same profile and the same incarnation cross, just in different gates, we both have an open self center. And that's a massive part of having that open self. And in Frankie's chart, it's completely open. Like, there are no gates activated. So it is like a wide open window. The analogy I always use for completely open centers is like, think about the centers, like your sacral, you've got gate 5, 14, 29 activated. In your heart, you've got gate 51 activated. That's like having a screen and a window. So like, if the window is open, the air is coming in, we've got that beautiful breeze, but the birds, the bats, the bees, the bugs, they're staying outside. With your open self center, there is no screen. There's nothing of yours filtering what's coming in. So it's almost like anything can come in if we're not vigilant and we're not careful. But at the same time, that also means that like, you're someone who absolutely needs to try things on to see what fits and what doesn't, to kind of sit in it for a while to see, does it feel authentic? And again, authenticity may not be the strongest indicator because that's so open in your chart. It's got to feel safe. You have to feel anchored in it. You have to feel emotionally connected to it. Like, you feel like you can put your voice to it. And it's not as instantaneous as the self going, oh, expanding toward things it feels like you identify with and contracting from things it doesn't. So this issue of identity for you is fluid, is mutable. Like you said, it's constantly growing and evolving and changing. And the wrong people, or even just like normal human interactions we have with people, like, society fetishizes consistency. And that's not the way of the age of Aquarius. The age of Aquarius fetishizes growth and evolution and transformation and like stepping into like the best versions of ourselves. So I personally, I view this kind of Saturn moving through gate 37, especially on the doorstep of this kind of, age of Aquarius, because at that around that time, Pluto's maybe doing its dance between Capricorn and Aquarius as well. I think it's almost like a call to action to like, help us realize where in our friendships, our family relationships, our romantic relationships, et cetera, is there an expectation maybe of stagnancy? Or is someone projecting onto us like certain expectations of who we should be and how we should be? And where is that maybe out of alignment with who we actually are? And how do we advocate for ourselves in those relationships? How do we, allow ourselves to be loved and receive love and give love, but maybe without that conditional aspect to it? Like, like you didn't take on the same job everyone in our family has always had. So I'm disappointed in you, as opposed to you found something you're really amazing at and adept at. I'm so proud of you for doing something that you love so deeply. Like, it's kind of, allowing ourselves to have the self-love and the community support. Like, I see Gate 37 as like having us kind of reckon with that a little bit.
Yeah, and also allowing those close relationships to be easy, I feel like is another growth point.
Yeah. Well, that, that's interesting because that reminds me of Gate 36, which is my incarnation cross version. You and I both have the Garden of Eden. So, Frankie's conscious son is in Gate 12, conscious earth would be Gate 11, and then unconscious son is 36, unconscious earth is 6. We're opposite, we're flipped, right? So, Gate 37, this gate of crisis, really is about the ease with which we are able to emotionally share of ourselves. Because Gate 36 is like, we crave these big, intense emotions sometimes. Like, we want things to be like emotionally risky and emotionally rich and like, I don't know, just like intense. But just because it's hot doesn't necessarily mean it's healthy. And so I learned that lesson the hard way multiple times over in my early 20s and late 20s and early 30s, to be honest. But that Gate 36 sometimes, like, it craves emotional intensity. And I love that you brought up ease, because Gate 36 is like, oh, if it's easy, it's not worth it. That's kind of the shadow of it. Whereas, like, not everything has to be like turned up to 11 to be important and perfect and exactly what we need. But we also shouldn't be afraid of like intensity either. So it's like trying to help us navigate like big, intense emotional experiences without becoming like, quote unquote, drama queens, or, which I hate that term, but like, there are people who like are almost like they're a magnet for drama. If it's something's not going wrong, it's almost like they're a magnet for the thunderstorms and the chaos and the whole, it's like they need that, right? But that's not healthy. That's emotionally draining for them. It's emotionally draining for the people around them. But then there's people who also are like, and I've kind of been guilty of this in the past couple years, this like siloing yourself off from anything that's emotionally difficult either, of trying to kind of be like in a hut in the woods, metaphorically, like, with your, I mean, I kind of am. I'm living with my three dogs by myself, kind of in my own little silo, but that's not sustainable either. We have to be out in community. So how do we handle more challenging crises, right? Emotionally. That's not the next gate it's going to go to after 37, but that's going to be right before we kind of, that'll be kind of toward the end of Saturn's transit in Pisces. It'll be right before it transits into gate 25. But 36 is part of your channel of transitoriness. So that's another big one. I think for your chart specifically, it's like the perfect one to look at this for Saturn's transit, because you have three really intense Pisces gates that are natal to you that like are a big part of this transit. Like 55, 30 from Aquarius, 36 from the gate of crisis. That's going to be another big one for you. And they're located in channels, which kind of is even like, so there's like amplification of that energy. It's something you're supposed to get really good at, but this might be like the, almost like the, I don't know, like the practicum of like, let's like practice all the things we've learned with it so far.
Yeah, it's like the third line kind
Oh
of.
yeah. That kind of trial and error. Let's see. Let's yeah. Because this is also like, that's the thing that the Saturn return kind of does for us. It gives us that final, like, let's final kind of gasp at trying and throwing things at the wall and seeing what works, what doesn't, before we really start taking that time and integrating. And even though you don't have a ton of six line energy in your chart, one of the things you and I are supposed to learn is, as people who are predominantly with that third line, much heavier than the sixth, is we have to do our own little postmortem. We have to do our own kind of living autopsy, because like the sixes have their whole like 20-year period on the roof. We don't get that. So we have to do like little micro periods where we're like, maybe we're not on the roof, but we're on the second floor, or maybe we're like, I don't know, we're just temporarily up there, right? Where we're able to like try to get that perspective, try to integrate so we're not repeating the same lessons over and over again. Because the third line, if we're not careful, it becomes Groundhog Day, like that Bill Murray movie, where just like it's like the same challenge over and over and over again. We want to make sure that every time we're kind of leveling up with that thing. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that kind of nets out in the collective. So the next gate after the gate of friendship actually is going to go into your head center. It's another gate that you have in your chart, the gate of doubt. So the gate of doubt, gate 63, it's your unconscious Mercury's placement. And the gate of doubt, it's funny. I think this will be one that might be a little bit easier for you because you don't do live in the head so much. The gate of doubt asks us to like kind of reckon with our skepticism, right? Like typically, well, I mean, it's funny. I always say typically when this gate's out of balance, we either are like tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists where everyone is lying to us and everyone's hiding something and we doubt everybody in the world around us. Like everyone's lying, no one's telling you the truth. Or we do that to ourselves where we're like, I can't trust myself, or I don't know what I think I know, or like it's almost like we're gaslighting ourselves about our own like intelligence and aptitude and experiences, et cetera. But if we're
I would
able to,
never.
it's funny, I live in the self-doubt part of this more so than the doubt of other people.
Yeah,
Although
yeah.
every once in a while I'll find myself like, in a YouTube rabbit hole where I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't go watch that conspiracy theory documentary. Like, but Gate 63, I think, is gonna really ask us to think about our trust in ourselves, our trust in our communities, our trust in our relationships, and like bringing that sense of like doubt to a healthy sense of skepticism. Like, we want to be pragmatic and know that, like, everyone is a human who is struggling, and sometimes people will say one thing, do another. It's not necessarily that they were lying, but maybe like they're struggling with something too. So I think it's like trying to help us be a little bit more, I don't know, like pragmatic and, realistic and not so, I guess like putting up a giant protective wall and projecting for things that aren't even there yet. So Pisces brings this kind of emotional quality too to gate 63. So what has your relationship been with your gate of doubt so far? Like, how has that kind of played out for you, especially it being your unconscious Mercury?
Yeah, I feel like I do talk about this a lot. And I'm really like my I may be like risking my anonymity here, but my master's thesis was like a dialectic between Taoism and marketing. And I feel like my affinity with Taoism sort of relates to my relationship with the Gate of Doubt. Because it really is just at the base of experience, like, and mystery outweighs knowing, essentially. So I'm always going to know less than I don't know. But that is actually like a really beautiful place to be and to live from, because it like allows a lot more grace through the third lining 36 kind of, you can just like, oh, I've made a mistake again.
What can I
Maybe
learn?
something, what's gonna come? Something's gonna come from it, and again, like it is something that I feel like collectively we would benefit from a little bit more doubt, both from our scientists and our mystics.
And even I think a little more grace. I love that you brought that up because I think, again, like another, again, as much as like materialist science has done wonders for, the world, I think a lot of times we expect certainty where there shouldn't be certainty. We just don't know. And like you have this unique combination of 61 and 63 kind of both activated, and 61 living in your conscious and your unconscious. Like 61, and it's a Uranus placement for you, which is really cool, and an unconscious Neptune for you. Like 61 wants us to get comfortable sitting in the space between the question and the answer. Like 61 is like, we don't need to figure things out right now. Like, we give our brains grace as we're kind of trying to navigate things that are maybe intergenerational, multi-generational problems to solve, or things that are maybe beyond our comprehension right now. It allows there not to be a need for certainty. It allows us to kind of like just be okay in the gray space and the question, which is so difficult for a lot of people. And I think like that's something your soul brought to this planet because of the unconscious nature of it. Like your Neptune, that's our spirituality, our creativity. So it doesn't surprise me at all that like that was your thesis, was like this intersection between marketing and Taoism, this very like like material world, spiritual. And it doesn't surprise me you also found human design, because there's a lot of amazing Taoist interpretations of the I Ching, like a lot of really amazing kind of ways of reading that. But yeah, I think that's something as the collective, our relationship to doubt and certainty and self-trust and trust of the other, like again, through our emotional interactions, is going to be an interesting theme of the next few years.
Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely. And also, like, something that I've been playing with probably for like the past year that's been really helpful to me. It's actually from a book called Physics as Language.
Ooh.
But it's the last chapter, it's called The Last Word. And in it, there's this line like, what follows from thinking about things a certain way? So rather than seeing like ideas as, or even facts as truths, like almost applying that open G center way of treating them, where it's like, okay, if I try on, if I believe I'm an emotional manifester, what follows from that? Or if I believe I'm a INFP or whatever, what follows from that? And just like having that like loose holding of belief systems is a lot more empowering than being really like dogmatic and fixed about it. And it's a lot more empowering, I think, to the individual. But then also like a big learning curve for me is like trusting that other people also, and I think this relates to what you were saying about like Gate 37, that it's like if I'm in relationship with someone and I've got this like slightly intense energetic field, that I can trust that they can like take themselves away from me if they need to, or ask me to tone it down or whatever, you know, because I think like having that respect that different people are in different places with different ideas that they're running, but trusting that that is still like that's their trip, that's the journey they're on, like, and letting us all have that
Yeah,
because
it's
it's all we
like
really have.
exact. I think one of the things that you and I know well as 1-3s is like personal experience. Like a lot of times you can watch other people go through something, but until you've really been through there it yourself and had that baptism by fire, like it doesn't stick the same way. And so I think like I love, and this is a beautiful place to kind of end our conversation, like the gate of doubt, the gate of friendship, like gate 55, gate of spirit, gate of feelings, like a lot of that, like we experience them so personally. But this idea of having grace for allowing other people to be exactly where they are on their journey, kind of meeting them with that compassion and like being more comfortable in the uncertainty of like, we're all figuring stuff out. We're all in a place of like developing our own relationship to ourselves, to others, to source, to, you know, just the world around us. And like, you know, how do we bring the most compassionate versions of ourselves to those interactions? That's it for this week. Thank you so much to Frankie for sitting in communion with me. If you'd like to connect, I would love to tell you about you and what your chart says about your journey this lifetime. Head on over to interiorcreature.com, where you can find information about birth chart readings via the book a reading link on my menu bar. And if you want to go deeper and really peel back the layers of your relationship to all of your placements in your chart and do some deep and supportive deconditioning work around those energies, you are cordially invited to join us in the Karmic Studies Elevator community. You can learn more about that by clicking on the Karmic Studies Elevator link on that same menu bar. Until next time, have an amazing final full week of Pisces season and at the end of this zodiacal year. See you next week.